Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a very special payback review edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's payback at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, the overall feeling last night, ladies and gentlemen, of Payback is that there was nothing really technically wrong with it. There was no glaring errors made. There was nothing horrible to report. There's nothing that we can say, oh my God, did they blow this spot? Or oh my God, did they totally crap the bed with this angle? There was nothing like that. The pay-per-view itself, for the most part, was fine. It's just that there was nothing special. There was really nothing here that grabbed you and said, wow. And that's a shame because there was a lot of missed opportunity. A lot of missed opportunity. Things they could have done that would have really been intriguing. Things they could have done to make the matches a little bit more special. And they kind of chose not to. They chose to make this almost a glorified Raw or a SmackDown in a sense. I mean, I'm watching it. It was a little over 2.5 hours, I think. I'm watching it and I'm saying, this just reminds me of Monday Night Raw or SmackDown with a couple of big title matches, yes, but there's nothing here that screamed must-see, must-buy pay-per-view. Really nothing. And it's a shame, because as we discussed yesterday, there were some steps they could have taken, I think, to make this pay-per-view feel important. Instead, it was extremely predictable. It was well played out as far as the actual wrestling matches were concerned. Some of them were a bit short. Oddly enough, some of them I thought were going to be short were longer than I thought, and some of them that I thought were probably going to be long were actually pretty short, which is a little bit weird. Yeah, I mean, you got Big E and Sheamus getting somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 or 16 minutes. And the Riot Squad and the Iconics got like 10 minutes. And some of these matches barely scratched 10 minutes. Some of the important matches barely scratched 10 minutes. So it was kind of interesting. Let's start out, of course, with the pre-show match. The Iconics versus the Riot Squad. Or I guess it's now called Live Riot, or I don't know. But the story of this match was basically that Liv Morgan and Ruby Riot were not on the same page as much as they should be. At one point, Liv Morgan looked like she was going to leave. But then she come back, and together they conquered the Iconics. Unfortunately, this angle's been done. That's exactly what they did when Liv Morgan and Ruby Riot first kind of got back together. So it's almost like they just repeated the angle. It's a little bit early to tease a breakup. You've just reunited. So they're not teasing a breakup. They were just kind of reiterating, yeah, they're still not really on the same page 100%, but now they are. Well, you kind of did that already. Other than that, the match was fine, but I just found that a little bit odd and a little bit offsetting that they would just sort of redo, almost like, well, we know nobody was watching that, or we know we didn't do it that well. If you remember, we commented on it and said, I don't really feel they did it that well. The reuniting of Ruby Riot and Liv Morgan could have been done far better. And it's almost like they said, yeah, maybe we'll take another stab at it. And we'll try it here again. Let's hope this is the last time, because you can't keep having this. So what's your thoughts overall, Todd, on the Riot Squad defeating the Iconics?
Well, like you said, they kind of needed that victory, the Riot Squad. There was a few times in that match where Liv Morgan wanted to walk out on the match and turn heel on Ruby Riott, but I guess it turned out okay that she didn't turn heel.
But did they not do that already? Did they not do that when they first reunited? Liv Morgan got in the ring and said she wasn't going to, be there, and then the Iconics kind of teased them into a match. They sort of did that, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they did tease it a month or so ago.
Right.
They were going to break up, and
it was the same angle. Well, not that they were going to break up, that they were not going to even that they weren't even going to reunite. Mike, it was a little bit odd to see them sort of just replay that almost identical angle.
It really was. I mean, it doesn't. This was sort of an odd pay-per-view altogether in my mind, but this was really, really odd, you know? I mean, I guess it furthers the angle with Bayley and Sasha, but again, I just don't get it.
I don't get why you have to reiterate. We get it. They reunited, even though they're still a little bit bitter toward each other. They've got a lot to prove, but you can't have every match one of them storming out. You know, you had your big moment where Liv Morgan didn't trust her, but then the proof was in the match, and that should have been enough. It's almost like they're saying, well, we don't think anybody watched that, or it wasn't underlined good enough. We didn't get the point across good enough. We'll do it again. Well, you don't need to do it again. You don't need to do it again. It's already been done. Apollo Crews takes on Bobby Lashley. This is a little bit better match than I thought it might be. But again, a little bit odd in the sense that I realize you're absolutely trying to make Bobby Lashley look strong, and I'm glad that we don't have a ton of these what you would call unclean finishes where, oh, he would have won, but MVP and Shelton Benjamin and the ceiling collapsed on him and all kinds of things. I'm glad we don't have a ton of that. But if there was ever kind of really a place where it would fit, this probably would have been it. This probably would have been the moment. Because at the end of the day, he just taps out very quickly. Does Apollo Crews, and then screams from the rampway after attacking Bobby Lashley, I'm going to get my belt back, you can bet on that. Well, it's not like you got cheated out of your belt. You submitted. Now, had you lost due to some interference that the referee didn't see, we could identify with you screaming, I'm getting my belt back, that's baloney, blah, blah, blah. Then we'd all say, yeah, you know, MVP and his crew cheated. Feel bad for Apollo Crews. Give him another shot. Well, give him another shot. Why? You tapped out. So I thought that was a little bit weird. I also thought it was weird that he attacks Bobby Lashley after the match because, he is the face. And even if you're going to turn him heel, you'd be turning him heel against a heel. So that doesn't really work. So I'm not, and it's not like he can join MVP's faction now, because if he joins MVP's faction, his main enemy is Bobby Lashley, who took his belt. So that doesn't make any sense. So I'm not really sure why they did that. But again, Mike, it felt odd. It felt odd that Apollo Crews would tap out so quickly. It felt odd there was no interference. I thought for sure that Lashley would win the belt, but there would be some kind of underlying circumstances that made you say Apollo got screwed. And instead, he has nobody to blame but himself. He tapped out.
Right. I don't get that. I just don't get it, you know? I mean, if you're going to turn him heel, okay, fine. And I thought at one point the goal was to turn him heel and put him with that crew. But
right.
That wouldn't make sense either, you know?
Not now. I mean, at one point it could have made sense. It doesn't make any sense now. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Todd, it was a better match than I thought it was going to be. But really, that kind of a decisive win for Bobby Lashley, while it helps Bobby Lashley, it doesn't help Apollo Crews. And I really thought if there was a moment, and I'm not really for all these weird finishes where there's interference, but if there was ever a moment where there should have been, this was probably it.
No, you're absolutely right there. Like he said, it was one of the better matches I see in a long time with Bobby Lashley, and half of the matches he done was never that great when he was in Impact Wrestling. And well, like you said, at least he shows up every week to do his job. At least he's doing his job.
I mean, he does, but isn't this a little weird that you would just have, I don't know. I would think there should have been interference. I would have thought there should have been some kind of a finish that would have led to you as a fan saying Apollo got ripped off and maybe getting a rematch out of it. At this point, Apollo didn't get ripped off. Apollo tapped out. No ripoff to it. The better man won. You lost. What do you got to say? And now you sort of look bitter by attack. It's just a weird thing. I didn't like it. I liked the match. I didn't like the angle. So then we get Big E versus Sheamus. And as we said, poor Sheamus. Sheamus still taking some hellacious bumps, by the way. I got to tell you. The one thing about Sheamus is this. You can say what you want. Some people don't like him. Some people think he's boring. Some people think he doesn't have a great demeanor about him or whatever. This guy never dogs it. I mean, is he the best wrestler in the WWE? No. But I've never seen a Sheamus match where you say, man, he just mailed it in. He always takes bumps. He always, always, always bumps. He always puts out an effort. And this was no different. And this was actually a pretty good match. And it furthers Big E's solo career some. It didn't bury Sheamus. Sheamus got in a lot of offense and stuff. But it's just a good, solid, sort of a mid-card victory. Nothing really wrong with it, except, Mike, that it was so ridiculously predictable that it just kind of felt like you're watching the inevitable.
Right. It was with all the things that are swirling around, and we know that this is Sheamus' last run. I don't know. Yeah, he's lost some weight, but his injury doesn't go away. Whatever that injury is, it doesn't go away. So, okay. So, we know this is his last run. And like you said, if anything else, the Bruce Pritchard era is predictable. All
yes.
Right? You could predict it. You could almost not watch for a week, for a month.
Yeah.
You know, and say, okay, this is X, Y, and Z is going to happen at this particular time, at this particular space, and it's going to happen. And it wouldn't be a spoiler. It'd be a fact, you know?
Right. Yeah, so now the underlying storyline all night long is, will Roman Reigns sign the contract? Well, he's there. I mean, this is another dumb thing. How do you show up if you didn't sign the contract? Remember when they had the contract signings like a month before the pay-per-view and you must sign the contract? Nobody made Roman Reigns sign the contract. Nobody said, well, if you don't sign, there ain't no point of you showing up to the arena because you're not getting in. You sign now, you don't sign. Nobody said that. That doesn't make any sense. Then all these other contract signings we see are bogus. You don't need to sign the contract apparently till you're walking down the rampway, right? So that's dumb. The good news is we're already seeing more diverse dialogue from Paul Heyman, which is a good thing. Paul Heyman's always good on the mic. He's definitely going to help Roman Reigns out. So we go to Matt Riddle versus King Corbin. This was a weird thing because you know my philosophy, and my philosophy is that wrestling should not be censored in any way. It should be offensive. It should bring in real life situations. And it should actually blur the lines between fantasy and reality. But when you got King Corbin tweeting that Matt Riddle is not only a failure in the ring, but a failure at home, which is an indication of him cheating on his wife, I'm okay with that. Here's the problem. It's not just, I had an affair on my wife. By saying that, you have now said the girl who accused him of forcing her is a liar. That's what you've said, because he's saying it was an affair, and King Corbin is saying, yeah, yeah, he cheated on his wife. Well, it's not cheating on your wife if you force someone to have sex. I mean, it is, that's a crime. And I thought this was still under some sort of an investigation. I thought this was still somewhat up in the air of what happened, but apparently not. Apparently the minds have been made up. And they believe Matt Riddle, and they do not believe the girl, and apparently they believe Velveteen Dream. I heard that the Velveteen Dream's accusers were not even contacted by WWE attorneys. So you run a little risk here, and here's the risk. Let's say a month from now, 2 months from now, more information comes out and you were wrong. Now it looks like you played up an angle based on a girl's sexual abuse. I don't like it. This is one of the ones I would have said, no, you can't do that. And the reason you can't is the jury is still out on whether or not he had a consensual affair on his wife or whether there was some truth to any kind of a forced sexual situation. And we can't take the chance until everything is clear. So I was really surprised about that. Now, the match itself, Matt Riddle, you know, listen, one of the most overrated, in my opinion. I know a lot of people like Matt Riddle. The reason they like Matt Riddle is because he's come out and said, I smoke pot. So everybody that's a pothead is like, yeah, yeah, he smokes pot. He's our hero. Whatever. I don't care if he smokes pot. He's not entertaining. He's just not entertaining to me. I'd much rather watch Baron Corbin, who's not as good a wrestler. He's not as good an athlete. But I'd much rather watch him than I would Matt Riddle name every single one of his moves the bro something. I mean, this is really, 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 really dumb. This is a really, really bad angle that should have lost any momentum in like 1980. This is the equivalent of Anderson and Gallows calling people nerds in 2020. So it was an okay match. Baron Corbin attacks him afterwards, back in the dressing room, puts him through the table. I guess the feud's going to continue. I'm just a little surprised that they would mention anything to do with this extramarital affair, though, Todd, because I haven't heard that the case has been closed on whether it was a consensual affair or not, and I think that's taking a chance.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with the Matt Riddle thing. And like you said, the case when he was got accused of sexual harassment or something like that, you know, they just dropped it just like that. They just dropped the case like that. No lawyer.
Yeah, you got to be real careful with it too, Mike, because again, what happens if more information comes out in a month and this girl is able to prove some sort of an allegation? That really makes them look very, very, very unsympathetic.
It really does, but again, I mean, it's like they're saying, okay, we believe him over her, and it's over, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, until the cops say it's over, it's not over.
Right.
You know?
And that's my point, Mike. It would have been fine if this girl came out and said, I had an affair with Matt Riddle. And I'm just telling the world because, you know, his wife doesn't know or something, and it was consensual, but I had an affair with him. I would have said, okay, that's fair game. Absolutely fair game to do a wrestling angle about. But when she says, no, I was forced, then I think you need to say, hold the brakes. We can't say anything about this until 100% guaranteed, no doubt about it, no longer being investigated, no case, no nothing. We are assured by the authorities this is over. You know what I mean? Mike, that's what I would do anyway.
That's what I would do anyway. But, hey, again, if you and I were working for the WWE or own the WWE, that's what we would do. But, hey, we don't, so we can't, you know?
I just don't. I've never seen a company open themselves up for more potential trouble than the WWE does. And they just do it like, oh, no big deal. I mean, let's just say, I hope it doesn't happen. I don't like Matt Riddle, but I don't want him to be a abuser. I hope he's not an abuser. But let's just say she comes up with, oh, I have a text message here where I'm saying to him, why did you force me to do this or something? And boy, are they going to look bad. They can't backpedal from it. I don't know why you just – was it necessary to do that? You could have said he was a failure in NXT. And now he's come up here looking to be a success in WWE. He's got another thing coming. You could have pointed out that he got tossed on his ass in the Royal Rumble. You could have pointed out a million things. And again, if it was simply an affair, I would say, hey, that's great. Mixed real life with, you know, wrestling shtick is good. But she's saying it was not an affair at one point, at least. And I think you got to be damn sure it wasn't, or it was, before you make any kind of light of it or use it as a wrestling angle. That's just my thought. I don't know. All right. So we get to Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax against Bayley and Sasha. Now, truthfully, I had this weird feeling. I know I didn't pick it, but I just, if you listen to yesterday's show, you'll hear me say, don't rule it out that they'll give Shayna and Nia that belt. Don't rule it out, because something tells me they want Nia Jax in a tag team where she can do minimal damage. And that's the story they told. This was actually a good match. The reason it was a good match mostly was Sasha and Bayley, who did a really, really good job of telling the story of, we are supremely confident we will win because we are best friends and they are enemies. And then going from that to the realization, we're not doing well, we're losing, and we can't seem to get it together. There was a moment where they just sort of looked at each other after, I think, Nia Jax kicked out of something, as if, what do we do? We're in deep water now, and we're in trouble. And I think the Shayna Baszler tapping out Bayley with Sasha's forearm or whatever, it was kind of cool. It was a good overall match. And I think now that we're going to begin to see the falling apart of Sasha and Bayley, it'll probably start happening tonight. Let's hope the fans are back by the time this gets into the stages of they're going to have a match, because that they really deserve that. We've been crying for a rematch of this for a couple of years. And having faces on monitors, I have to tell you. The WWE saying, oh, look at our technologically advanced, our how we are. We have this Thunderdome thing. You look like fools. Because in the meantime, AEW's got a small crowd there, but at least they're energetic and at least they're live. It's not just weird faces on TV screens. That's just bizarre with piped in music, with piped in sound effects. That's just bizarre. I'm sorry. I look at that and I'm like, I do not like this at all. I don't like it at all. Maybe it's better for the wrestlers to look out there and be able to see faces, but you want to talk about total phony. It's okay. There's no audio. They can't have any audio because they're afraid somebody's going to shout something horrible. So they just pipe in the audio. So here's just a bunch of people staring at the wrestling ring and fake audio coming in and out of it. I'd just much rather have a small crowd. By the way, folks, a report just came out. You know, a lot of people give me grief. I didn't mention it because this is a wrestling show mostly. But a lot of people gave me grief about the fact that I was belittling the COVID virus. I wasn't taking it seriously enough. The CDC has just reported that 94% of the people who died did not die from COVID-19. They died with other things, and COVID-19 was in their system that might have contributed to their demise, but they didn't die of it. they had comorbidities, many more than one, such as heart disease, cancer, diabetes, liver problems, all kinds of issues. That means 6%, this is what the CDC said, 6% of the 183,000 people that died of COVID in this country, 6% died strictly of nothing else but COVID. That would be about 9,000 people. The flu kills more people than 9,000 people. Pneumonia kills more people than 9,000 people. So now who's right? I told you from the very beginning, these numbers are not accurate because the people who are dying are deathly sick anyway, extremely old, or have so many health problems that this is just a cofactor. I can't tell you how many people you say, well, look, they have all kinds of problems. They're 86 years old. They have degenerative heart failure. They have lung issues. They have high blood pressure. They're on all kinds of medication for different things. And if they catch pneumonia in this weakened state, it's going to kill them because they're too weak to fight it off. You hear that all the time from doctors. Well, if you're elderly and you have a lot of comorbidities, you catch pneumonia, you're in trouble. That's why you got to be careful. Well, now we found out 94% of the people who died were, in fact, not listed as dying from COVID, but with COVID, meaning they had comorbidities that contributed or greatly contributed to their death, and that COVID was just a part of it, much like pneumonia is to someone who has degenerative lung issues or heart disease. And out of the 6% that actually died of COVID, almost 4% were elderly. Let that sink in. So 9,000 people died strictly of COVID. Two-thirds of them, 9,000 people, were elderly. So that leaves you with about 3,000 people. 3,000 people. And you've closed the entire world. Mike, I don't know if you read that report, but it justifies some of the things we've been saying on this show.
It really has. And think about it like this. Ric Flair, who has lived a horrendous lifestyle over the course of his career, 30-plus years, 40-plus years in the sport, right? I mean, drinking, yes, doing all kinds of different things, sleeping with a bunch of different women, and all the, who knows what kind of transmitted diseases that they had or whatever. And he showed up to work, and he's what, 70?
Of course he did.
In his mid-70s?
Yes.
You know?
And was near death a couple of months ago, well, 5-6 months back.
Yeah. So, I mean, and he didn't die or anything, but he didn't have COVID. And what did he say? Wasn't he the one that said, this is the safest place to be?
Yes.
And he's 70-some years old?
Yes. This is what I'm trying to tell you. I've been trying to tell you in the nicest possible way. Of course, you need to be careful if you have some kind of degenerative disease or you have comorbidities or you're very old. Of course, you have to be careful. But at this stage, everyone has this information. I'm just a guy who does a radio talk show about wrestling. If I have this information, don't tell me that the government doesn't have this information. Why then is the government lying to you, saying you still have to wear your grandmother's doily on your face when you go into a supermarket, when quite obviously that's not true? There's something greater going on. Believe it or you don't have to believe it. But it's true. Anyway, I don't know where you're going to go with the Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax thing. My presumption is we're going to get a Riot Squad Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax feud, which would be, I guess, okay. If Nia Jax manages not to kill either Ruby Riott or Liv Morgan, that would be awesome. Next up, we get Keith Lee versus Randy Orton. Now, I will say the following. I don't understand this feud. You've made the feud. You know, I said Keith Lee will probably have to end up winning. Otherwise, this is a nightmare for Keith Lee. But then when they kept showing the packages of how Drew McIntyre was put out and he has a hairline fracture, it could be the end of his career and this, that, and the other thing, I said, you know what? This is Drew McIntyre's guy to beat then. Again, they're not going to let Keith Lee do it because this is Drew McIntyre's guy. Now, he's wronged Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre's the guy who's going to have to get the revenge. And I was wrong. Unbelievably, Randy Orton drops clean to Keith Lee. Now, did Randy Orton put in a great, full, gigantic effort into this match? I would say no. But what he did do is he took some hellacious bumps. He really did. Even the finisher. I never thought Randy Orton take that finisher, to be honest with you. And he made Keith Lee look damn good. And if you are telling me that Vince McMahon has Keith Lee come into this federation and clean pin Randy Orton in 8 minutes, then he's got big, big plans for Keith Lee. So we can all pat ourselves on the back, folks, because we said a long time ago, way back when Keith Lee was doing indie wrestling, we mentioned his name and said, wait till Vince McMahon sees Keith Lee. I said it to his face. I talked to Keith Lee during intermission of a indie card, had my picture taken with him, and I said, the reason I'm having my picture taken with you, because I don't normally do that. I just don't. It's not one of the things I do. So the reason I actually am asking for the picture is the minute Vince McMahon and company sees you, you're gone. Okay, because you're exactly what they look for. A big guy with agility, charisma, doesn't look like a lot of people. He's not generic, can entertain the crowd. He's got all that. I knew it. And he has went from wrestling in front of 100 people, and the night I saw him, he actually lost, to clean pinning Randy Orton in his debut, on a solo debut in a pay-per-view. So we can congratulate ourselves, Todd, because we saw that one coming a mile away.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said about Keith Lee and everything, and going and come up to the main roster, and it's a pretty good feeling to have him on the main roster, but not right away, but it would be a good feeling to have him on the main roster.
I mean, you were there with me when we saw Keith Lee for the first time, and we all said, the minute Vince McMahon sees this guy, he's gone. He's not going to be in the indies. There's no way this guy is not going to make some major federation, and probably the WWE. So, I mean, there you go. Mike, it was pretty obvious, but this is the biggest vote of confidence I think I've ever seen Vince McMahon give somebody. Randy Orton last month was vying for the title against the top guy, Drew McIntyre, and put Drew McIntyre out just last week. And this week, he's getting clean pinned by a newcomer, Keith Lee. That has to be the biggest vote of confidence I think I've ever seen anybody give a wrestler.
Right, and think about this. We said that he tends to dog things at times. Does Randy Orton? He didn't dog it. Just 8 minutes.
No,
he didn't dog it. No. So, and he put him over, and he put him over big. And I mean, like you said, this is a guy. This is a Vince McMahon guy. A 6'3", 6'4". 300-plus-pound guy that's really quick, really fast, and young, you know. This is Vince McMahon, you know. Even though you would think that, well, he started out in NXT, he's a Triple H guy. No, this is a Vince McMahon guy.
No question. This is exactly the type of person, which is what I said to Keith Lee. You're exactly the type of person that Vince McMahon loves to have. Huge guy, powerhouse-looking guy, entertaining, good on the mic, doesn't look like everybody else, agile. unique, very unique guy. And he's gonna go on to really, really big things in WWE, really big. Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio versus Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy. I'm going to be brutally honest with you. I'm done with this Seth Rollins Monday Night Messiah thing. It didn't work. You tried hard to make it work, but you either went too far or not far enough. That's your problem. For a while, you weren't going far enough. And he was just coming out and losing, and still saying, I'm a Messiah. I'm showing the way for all these people that just keep losing. And then Seth Rollins himself, he loses to Drew McIntyre, he loses to Kevin Owens, he can't win. So you weren't going far enough. Then you went the other way. You know, he blinded Rey Mysterio and then had a match where he actually had to pull somebody's eyeball out of their head. And now it's just to the point where this just isn't working for me anymore. I don't see any chemistry between Buddy Murphy and Seth Rollins at all. You've never played up that Buddy Murphy is really like totally enamored with Seth Rollins and everything he says is golden to him. You've never really played that up. You've never really played up that they have that kind of relationship, like almost like the cult leader and the member. You've never really played it up, and it's just not there. Just not there anymore. And this is just a nail in the coffin. Dominic Mysterio and Rey Mysterio win. Yeah, there's a little bit of a problem because Buddy Murphy accidentally kicks Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins gives him a dirty look after the match. Maybe they're going to break this off. I don't know. I don't know where this is going. I'm just glad Dominic didn't turn heel. Because as I said on yesterday's show, he's not ready for that. He's not ready to take that kind of a top spot and use the mic in that fashion. Now let's hope Dominic is used sparingly and he's brought up slow because he can wrestle, but he needs the other aspect of his career in order. He needs the facial expressions, the mannerisms, the look, the whole feel that he's lacking. He'll get there. But he needs some time. It was an okay match. It's just that I've lost interest in this Monday Night Messiah thing because it runs hot and cold too much. It's either nobody can beat Seth Rollins, he's pulling eyeballs out of people, or everybody on the roster can beat Seth Rollins. And Buddy Murphy, I have no idea why Buddy Murphy would stay with someone who has not done a thing for his career except make him lose even more. So it's not really working for me, Mike, and I'm glad this feud came to an end, and hopefully there's something different on the horizon for Seth Rollins because this isn't working.
I hope so too, and that's the thing. And also one other thing, little detail that people missed about the Keith Lee match is the match really shouldn't have ended because if you look at how he pinned him, it seemed like one of Lee's legs was under the shoulder of Randy Orton. It just seemed like that. It just appeared that way to me, but I could be wrong.
I mean, they may play up that angle, but I doubt it. I think they're just going to go with Randy Orton greatly underestimated. I think what we're going to get is Randy Orton saying, okay, so I greatly underestimated Keith Lee. Didn't exactly know what I was getting into. He's a little bit more than I thought he was. Won't make that mistake again. And maybe we'll get a rematch. I don't know. I was just surprised Drew McIntyre didn't interfere. I'm glad he didn't, but I thought that's what we're going for. We're going to get Drew McIntyre interfering. Todd, what did you think of the Keith Lee match overall?
It was a pretty good match. Like you said, he wasn't really handcuffed or anything. They let him do what he did. Doing the ring last night, technically.
Yeah, everything was good. I thought Keith Lee, I thought this was a breakout performance for him because he just, you see, he has exactly what Dominic Mysterio is lacking. Watch Keith Lee's facial expressions. Watch how he sells what he's thinking by his facial expressions and his mannerism. In the beginning, when Randy Orton's music hits, he has that face that lets you know, I know I'm in for it. I know this is one of the top guys in the sport. And I know this isn't going to be easy. Almost that determination of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. But in the back of his mind, you can see him thinking, am I ready for him? That's really good facial expression. Second, when Randy Orton says, I demand your respect, and he's chopping him, and you see Keith Lee getting a little bit madder, and then realizing, okay, these hurt, but I've been hit by worse. And then just tearing into Randy Orton. Randy Orton did a good job of selling, why will this man not stay down, and how come he's not afraid of me, and how come I'm not able to dominate him mentally. So I thought they did a good job. They both did a good job. And Randy Orton did an exceptionally good job outside the ring afterwards, just looking like, what the hell just happened? How did I end up here? How did I end up losing this match? So I really think he sold Keith Lee very well. He must like Keith Lee, because Randy Orton's at a stage of his career where he don't have to do that. So, all right, let's get on to the big match. The triple threat, no disqualification match. Well, mostly it was just the Fiend versus Braun Strowman, because Roman Reigns is nowhere to be found. They take turns giving each other their finishers, and everybody kicks out of it. The interesting thing is Alexa Bliss is watching on the monitor, so there is no doubt now that she is going to be involved in some way, shape, or form with Bray Wyatt very, very soon. Now, I will still stick by my theory that they had no intention of doing this when they shot that swamp match and they had Alexa Bliss pretend she was Sister Abigail, that I still say there was no long-term plan to put her with Bray Wyatt. But they listened to the people on the internet who said, ooh, maybe that means she's going to be Sister Abigail. Maybe that means she's going to be with Bray Wyatt. And they said, well, you know what? We ain't got nothing else for her to do. Maybe we will do that. That's what I truly believe happened here. This was not a long-term plan. Anyway, I thought Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt did a pretty good job. It wasn't a brilliant match, but it was a hard-hitting match. I think that what we're seeing now is Bray Wyatt attempting to very, very subtly make the Fiend a face by selling a little bit more than he normally would, but still doing this thing where if you don't stay on him every second, I was waiting for the announcers to say that. If I was the announcer, the very first thing I would have said was, it's not that you can't hurt the Fiend. You can't stop. If you give him 15 seconds, he recovers. Watch Braun Strowman knock him down, and then Braun Strowman stumbles around for a minute. The Fiend is up. He's got to stay on him. You can't beat the Fiend any other way. You can't give him 15 seconds. You can't do it. I was waiting for the announcers to say that, because that's kind of what it looks like they're alluding to, is yes, the Fiend feels pain. Yes, the Fiend can be hurt, but he doesn't stay hurt. If you don't stay right on him and you give him a chance to breathe, he recovers almost instantaneously. Because that's what he was doing. At one point, they break the ring with a superplex of Braun Strowman, which is a pretty cool spot. And then Roman Reigns comes down with Paul Heyman, and he signs the contract. So he got his theme music queued up. He hasn't signed the contract yet. That doesn't make any sense at all. Roman Reigns does exactly nothing. He gets in the ring and tries to cover the Fiend. Fiend kicks out. Tries to cover the Fiend again. Fiend kicks out. Tries to cover Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman kicks out. Gets a chair, wails on Braun Strowman, gets the mandible claw by the Fiend, sells that pretty well, is able to kick the Fiend in the nuts and throw him outside the ring, and then he just spears Braun Strowman for the win. Well, number one, he wasn't even in the match the whole way. I don't understand that. So if it's a no DQ match, you can just not show up until the end? That doesn't make a damn bit of sense. So I thought this was anticlimactic. I knew Roman Reigns was going to win, and I'm okay with Roman Reigns winning. But on yesterday's show, I told you, let's wait and see what the WWE has in mind. Let's not shit on Roman Reigns winning yet, because there could be something really good coming out of this, such as retribution. I'm standing here looking at a pay-per-view called Payback. Payback is retribution. It's the exact same meaning. So I'm saying to myself, retribution's coming. That's what's going to happen. Roman Reigns is going to come out. It's going to look like easy win, but then the Fiend is going to pop right back up, and so is Strowman. They're going to start kicking the hell out of him, and retribution's coming. Nothing happened. They never showed their faces. And Roman Reigns wins a very, very anticlimactic win. Very anticlimactic. And truthfully, I don't even think Paul Heyman did a good job, because Paul Heyman, his job, okay, Braun Strowman, his job is to maybe say, Roman Reigns has beaten Braun Strowman before, and he can, you know, and he'll beat him again. Paul Heyman should be terrified of the Fiend. Paul Heyman should be, not say, oh, these two, Roman Reigns is going to walk right through them. No, no, that's the Fiend. His job is to say, look, I don't know what the hell that thing is that Bray Wyatt calls out every once in a while, but it doesn't deserve to wear a championship belt. And we're going to concentrate on trying to beat Strowman, because that thing, whatever it is, shouldn't even be in a wrestling ring. By not doing that, by poo-pooing him and just saying, oh, the Fiend is nothing, that's not a good thing. That's not, you never did that with The Undertaker. You never did that with Kane. And this is the same sort of a character where you're going to have to play up that Paul Heyman should be absolutely mortally afraid of the Fiend. And truthfully, so should Roman Reigns. Because he's a heel now. When he was a face, he shouldn't have been. But now that he's a heel, we should see a totally different Roman Reigns who says, I ain't fighting that. I don't know what the hell that is. I'm not fighting him. Doesn't deserve a championship. He never deserved a championship to begin with. I'll take on Strowman. But whatever that thing is, I want no part of it. If you don't sell the Fiend's fear tactics, he's nothing. Then he's just a dude in a mask, and that's not what you want. So it's up to guys like Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns to sell that. That's the main thing you got to sell. Now, Roman Reigns is not opposed to selling. Roman Reigns sold the hell out of the mandible claw. If you watch the mandible claw, he's already thrown Bray Wyatt out of the ring. He's setting up the spear, and he's still trying to like get feeling back into his mouth. That's very good selling on his part. That, man, if I'd stayed in that another second. But I don't like this Paul Heyman undermining the Fiend as if that's nothing to be afraid of. That's not good. If you think about it, if the Fiend was going to fight Braun Strowman, you know that Paul Heyman would have played up, I don't know what that thing is, and he's never fought anything like this before, and I've recommended Brock Lesnar not to fight him because we don't even know what the hell kind of a creature he is. That's what Paul Heyman would have said. Now, all of a sudden, he's being told to say, or is saying, oh, they're nothing. He's going to walk right through those two. I don't like that, Mike. I think it undermines the Fiend, and it's dangerous for the character.
Right, I agree with you there, you know, and that's the thing. I don't like to see the Fiend undermined, but here's something else to think about with this whole situation. They're possibly setting up a new Wyatt family. Possibly.
Oh, I think they definitely are, yeah.
If you listen to Corey Graves over the years as Alexa Bliss would come, Goddess, from Corey Graves. He's kind of toned that down recently. Now, for this to work, she's gonna have to change her gimmick altogether, and maybe even go from bleach blonde to whatever to different color hair, but she's gonna have to change her gimmick altogether, you know, for this to work. You know, but it could work. If this is a way to give her something to do and keep her happy, it could work.
I'm all for that. But the only reason I can think of to form a new Wyatt family, which could still include Braun Strowman, because Braun Strowman could say, well, you know, look what Roman Reigns did to both of us. Maybe he'll fall under Bray Wyatt's spell again and say, you know, maybe we were better as a unit. But the only reason to build a new Wyatt family is if they have somebody to take on. And that faction should have been Retribution, which would mean that they have to align themselves with Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman, which I thought was going to happen last night. That would have made sense. If Retribution came out, cost The Fiend or Braun Strowman their chance at the title or retaining the title, and we were left with the announcer saying, how does Roman Reigns or Paul Heyman tie into this Retribution thing? Then I would have said, oh, this is going to get good, because you know what's going to happen. Braun Strowman's going to say, okay, I'm not thrilled with Bray Wyatt, but we may have to team up here to combat these guys. And now with Alexa Bliss acting all weird and shit, you figure, well, she's going to combat the female that's in there, and maybe they're going to add somebody else, and we're going to have Retribution versus the Wyatt family for the winter. But I didn't see that. So I have no indication that is going to take place. So if the Wyatt family reforms, they reform to fight who? Seth Rollins' crew is on Raw. So I'm not really sure I'm not sure how this is going to work. But if that's what they are going to do, and they're just going to do it tonight or whatever, it should have happened last night. You had a great opportunity. You could have made more out of this title match than you did. And it's a shame that you didn't, because while we all know who was going to win and we were okay with it, you could have worked a little harder to make it more special, something that we're like, oh, we got to tune in to see what happens. Even if it was something as small as Alexa Bliss coming down after the match and standing next to the Fiend, anything that would have said, we better tune in. But I really would have liked to seen Retribution hit the arena. Because if you were left with the announcer saying, what the hell does Paul Heyman have to do with Retribution? Heyman with that shit-eating grin on his face, Roman Reigns having the belt, the announcer saying, is this one big unit now? Is Paul Heyman part of this Retribution thing? What about Roman Reigns? Then you're left with, shit, if Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman are in on this and Retribution is their gang, they just got the champion, they just got the top manager in the sport, and who's going to combat them? And then you'd say, well, it could potentially be the Wyatt family if they reform. That would be very, very cool. But I don't see that, Mike, so I don't know where they go from here.
I don't know where they go from here either. And look, here's the deal. I'm going to go ahead and give you my grade right now. It's going to be sort of a weird grade, because it's going to be two grades. On a scale of weirdness, you know, it's up there. It's going to be probably a B. Minus, a B plus to an A minus on the scale of awareness. Just grading it as we normally do, though, it'd probably be about a C plus pay-per-view, something like that.
Yeah, you know what? I'm giving it a C plus because, and a lot of people gave it better than that. I understand a lot of people liked it better, but the reason I'm giving it a C plus is nothing was technically wrong with it. It's just that you didn't take the opportunities you could have had to make it really, really good. You had everything. You had all your ducks in a row, but it didn't feel special in any way. There were ways you could have made some of these matches feel bigger and more special and furthered storylines in a better way, where you say, oh, that's interesting. Can't wait to see what happens there. Oh, look at this. That's cool. Can't wait to see what happens there. Instead, you kind of just took the easy way out and said, nah, just clean win, 9 minutes, you do this, no major storylines. Yeah, belts changed hands, but there's nothing involved in it that makes you say, oh my God, I can't wait to see what's going to happen. There could have been so much more. The Retribution thing would have been one of them. Maybe Drew McIntyre coming out after the Keith Lee victory, and you're thinking to yourself, maybe Keith Lee's the next guy for Drew McIntyre. They said they were friends, but, you know, Keith Lee's going to want that belt at some point. That could be interesting. Maybe you have something happen during the Apollo Crews match that makes you think, you know, Apollo Crews is either A, going to get a rematch that you're interested in, or maybe Lashley doesn't win the belt because interference backfires, and you think, well, maybe Apollo Crews is joining and Lashley's out. Anything you can do to further these matches, to make people say, oh, that's interesting, they're taking a path, I'm interested in seeing where they're going. None of that really happened. It's all just, yep, we saw this coming, and yes, it happened. Technically speaking, the matches were fine. Technically speaking, everybody did their job. But there was nothing in it, Mike, that felt super special.
Yeah. It really wasn't.
So it's unfortunate. Todd, what is your rating? We've both given it a C+.
I got to go with you guys. I got to give it a C+ as well.
So there you go, folks. It wasn't a horrible pay-per-view. I enjoyed it, and I do think Sasha and Bayley had the best match of the night, although I do also think Apollo Crews had a really good match. Bottom line of the situation is this, though. You missed some opportunities. You could have had a whole lot more out of this pay-per-view than you did. And that's the reason I'm giving it a full grade lower. If you had done some manipulation here of storylines, it probably would have been an A- to a B+. But just standard, generic, whatever, it just wasn't good enough. I mean, it felt like a glorified Monday Night Raw or a glorified SmackDown. That's all I can say. Anyway, folks, thanks for joining us. We'll be back here tomorrow with the Monday Night Raw report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.